Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, where we cover Georgia and Southern politics like Kudzu covers the South. Tim, how are you?
Pretty good, David. How are you tonight?
Doing well. We have a huge show tonight. Congressional candidate James Marlowe is going to join us around 7:20, and Mark Matheny of the Democratic Party of Georgia is going to give us some updates on some things happening there around 7:40, and I believe Bernita will be in maybe a little earlier than usual to tell us about the week in the blogosphere. But it's Memorial Day weekend, and I think it's important that people do remember the meaning of it. It's just people that have made sacrifices for our country. Usually we think military, but I guess any kind of sacrifice would be appropriate to honor this weekend.
Absolutely, David. For instance, all of our firefighters, our police officers, all of our public servants, this is a weekend for them.
Yes, I know at our church that they took the time to honor anybody that was passed away in the church. Just as a time, you need to do that and look at the people that brought you to the point you are in whatever organization or group you're part of.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, let's get into some politics. It appears that towards the close of the week that Governor Perdue is going to put his signature on the February 5th primary here in Georgia, moving the primary up several weeks more to be in play with some of the other big movers and shaker states. What do you make of this, Tim?
Yeah, what we got essentially now is just a super-duper primary on February the 5th. There's about 20 states in this thing, California and New York included. I'm not really sure what kind of clout Georgia might have there. It's really hard to say, but on the other hand, I don't see with all of the front-loading going on how Georgia could have stood off to the sidelines and been left out of it. I think the governor is hopeful that there will be some Republican candidates coming to Georgia about that time, but I'm just not sure of that, especially with California and New York going on, Florida going on right before that. Those states are a lot bigger and a lot more important.
Yes, and in the Republican primary, it may have more importance because I think, you know, a lot of Republicans write off California and New York as states they can't win at the presidential level, whereas Georgia, that's the place where you have to achieve if you're a Republican, and that's, I guess, they think a state that reflects the Republican Party's vision and poll.
And there's two words, David, Newt Gingrich. If he jumps in, obviously Georgia may be bypassed by a lot of Republicans because of that reason. Same thing with New York State. A lot of Republicans, you're right about that, a lot of Republicans are going to bypass it because of Mayor Giuliani. But if Newt Gingrich were to get in the race, then Georgia is probably off the political map, at least as far as the by and large Republicans are concerned on February 5th. But if Newt Gingrich does not get in the race, you got to look to see what a guy like Fred Thompson might then would do here.
Certainly, and he's beating Gingrich in a lot of the polls. Speaking more on our side, Hillary Clinton's campaign came out with a memo saying, this one person saying, hey, we could bypass Iowa. And part of the at first it said just bypass Iowa, and that's the first part that came out, and the Clinton campaign said, we're just not going to do that, Iowa's too important. But then it had a second part of that memo that said because some of these states, and Georgia was mentioned specifically in the memo, have early advance voting that we can focus on, instead of focusing on Iowa, our resources would be better spent there. And I thought, and there was only about three states mentioned, and Georgia was one of them, and I certainly think that Senator Clinton's in no better shape in Georgia than former Senator Edwards and Senator Obama. So that means that three of the top candidates would have to then, you know, really be in play here in Georgia on our side of the ball.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, as far as that memo is concerned, obviously someone leaked that out. It was not supposed to have gotten out. Personally, if I were the Clinton campaign, I would not bypass Iowa. You got to consider that Senator Edwards has just essentially sunk his presidential hopes into that state. He spent a lot of time there. He spent a lot of money there. If he should lose Iowa, I got to think he's done. If she were to bypass Iowa, however, and he wins it, then this thing could turn south. And you're right, Georgia would suddenly take on a great deal of importance.
Yes.
You got to remember when Jesse Jackson won this state, and who votes? Senator Obama wouldn't want to bypass this state either when 50% of the vote in this state is African-American.
In
he
the
could
Democratic
take her
primary.
On. Right.
Yes. But I do think the wild card there is, while 50% of the vote may be African-American, more than 50% of that is women. And then, and that's we need to pose this question to Bernita, is does an African-American woman identify more with Hillary Clinton as a woman or more with Barack Obama as an African-American? That's an important question to look at.
Well, who they might identify with is not Hillary Clinton, but Bill Clinton. What an ace to have in the hole. Bill Clinton was once called the first black American president, and they did that for a reason, because African Americans absolutely loved Bill Clinton. She's going to get some votes, David, from the African American community because of Bill Clinton.
I do have an interesting note on that. I was looking at a list of endorsers at the national level, federal endorsers of each candidate, and the person who made that statement, Representative Eddie Bernice Johnson of Texas, she says she's the one that penned that with to President Clinton late in his term. She's actually endorsing Senator Edwards, which I thought that was kind of, she didn't stick with Hillary on that, and I guess if people think that race is very important to her, she didn't endorse Senator Obama either. So that was just a very interesting aside.
That is interesting. But poll after poll shows in state after state that she is really battling Senator Obama for the African-American vote. He should not take that for granted.
No, it's certainly up for grabs. And for some of the reasons we've spoken of. And speaking of polls, I don't know if you saw the poll that came out of Florida.
I did.
And it was a company that I'm not familiar with. Do you have that company in front of you?
No, I do not. And no, I am not familiar with that company either. That's the first time I've ever seen that.
It was a firm I had not heard of. It wasn't just a traditional political polling firm. One of the media polling firms. But they had Senator Edwards leading, which that would have been the first time he led in Florida. Usually Senator Clinton's leading, and I think one of the polls I saw by American Research had Senator Edwards third out of a May poll. And
right,
so this poll was very different. But if it's true, Florida's going to move up in the scheduling, and they're talking about not even counting their delegates. But if that may give him some momentum, even if it doesn't count in delegates, that helps him down the line.
Yeah, delegate count or not, it would be a great beauty contest to win, wouldn't it, for Senator Edwards? He really needs to break through in a big way in his own backyard. I know you've seen the polling that shows him running a weak third in South Carolina, for instance, a state that he won in 2004. Florida is the state where John Edwards could really use a victory. But still, we got to wonder if this poll is not an outlier, because, as you said, every last poll that we have seen has shown her with the lead, and most have shown Edwards running third. So I just don't know what to tell you about this poll, because I've never heard of this firm.
Yes, I tend to believe that it could be an outlier, but it's what we do on this show is speculate, and it's information to speculate on. The next
true.
Thing that kind of came up this week was Rick Goddard, retired or soon to retire Air Force general from Houston County, has announced he's going to run against Representative Marshall. What do you make of that development?
Representative Marshall has got a big fat target on his back. He probably is target number one for both the Republicans and any aspiring Democrats. It would make sense in that particular district that a military person would step forward to do it. So I'm not really surprised, to be honest with you.
Yes, I mean, it's obviously he's going to, you know, people are going to look at that as their chance. Although, one thing that I noticed, both in Representative Marshall and Representative Barrow's districts, anywhere that their districts overlapped, their vote increased. And if you remember when the district stayed the same for Representative Marshall from 2002 to 2004, his vote count jumped from just barely winning in 2002 to getting something like 63% of the vote in 2004. And so I think that he could see the same kind of increase where he takes what was a close race in 2006 and gets a substantial win in 2008 and kind of puts himself out of that column. Because one thing people, I guess, forget about is that Sonny Perdue's from that district, and he was very popular in his own area, and he won't be on the ballot, so that factor will be gone. And then people that, you know, this is the first time that Jim Marshall has been the representative for a full term will get to know him, and I believe like him better.
Another thing you got to wonder about is who is going to be at the top of the ticket next year. Let's just say Senator Edwards is at the top of the ticket. Let's just pick him out. You would have to think that that would help Congressman Marshall down ballot a great deal. If, on the other hand, someone from up north like Senator Clinton is the party nominee, you've got to wonder if that might not hurt him a little bit. And then you've got to wonder about what the extra vote that inevitably comes out for the presidential contest that might not have voted last year would do next year, right?
Yes, well, I think you can make a case for any of the three helping any candidate. If it's, in fact, Representative Marshall endorsed former Senator Edwards when he was in Macon at one of his fundraisers recently, so maybe he's seeing that as the positive. But you could say, hey, Southern guy helps in the South, that's going to help Edwards. But then you could say, hey, Obama may increase the black vote in my district, that helps Congressman Marshall. And then finally,
right,
you know, Senator Clinton's talked a lot about, her campaign has talked a lot about, is her campaign empowering the waitress mom, the, you know, the working woman that really has to work, maybe married or maybe even the, you know, the top breadwinner. It's just, and those women don't vote as in high numbers as other women in other income brackets do. If they're successful in bringing those women out, that could help a candidate. So I think any of the three top candidates would claim, hey, this is the angle that's going to help. The thing we need is Democrats, whichever one is our nominee, to bring all those sources out in the same year to really have a catalyst to win other races in the South, like Senate races and congressional races.
Yeah, and you would think that Representative Marshall, with his strong credentials on the military and stuff, would be very popular amongst the extra independent voters that are going to come out next year. And that's what's really going to come out during a presidential contest that doesn't come out so much in the congressional election years is the independent voter. It would seem to me that Congressman Marshall would appeal to these people. Don't you think so?
I would think so. I mean, he's more middle of the road, and he's the kind of candidate we need in certain districts to win.
Right, especially in a district like that.
Certainly. Well, getting to another topic with our Republican friends, what is going on with some of these Republicans at these events? We had a big fight at Glenn Richardson's party between two Republican lobbyists. Then this past week, we had another fight outside of a Bill Green fundraiser. What do you make of these guys?
Well, I mean, what is going on in this state altogether, David? They run the state, essentially. They can't get along. It's like they've chosen up three sides, one group squarely behind the governor, one group squarely behind Glenn Richardson, and another group sitting off on the sidelines watching the whole thing with Casey Cagle. Everybody looking for a little angle. There are some issues that have come up as well in the federal area, such as immigration, for instance. And we really see the Republicans snapping at each other over this. I mean, we're seeing Senator Chambliss get booed at the state Republican convention. It seems like they, once again, I want to mention this, they have never before had power. They have never before had to govern in this state. They don't seem to know how to do it effectively.
Yes, well, and this is some of their younger folks, I think. This isn't, you know, some of the more established people. But, I mean, you know, you see the political consultant, or not really consultant, but the, you know, the staffer of two campaigns getting in some kind of fracas every so often, maybe once every other cycle, maybe once a cycle. We're talking about two fights within inside of about 2 months, which,
yeah.
I mean, I just don't know what's getting in the testosterone levels. I mean, pretty soon the joke's going to be, I went to go see a street fight, and Republican politics broke out.
It's okay to have a little tug of war in the party and this and that and the other, but when it is done in a very public way, as it has been done, right in front of the media for the whole world to see, I don't see how anyone in that party can think that's a good thing for the Republicans, and I don't see how they think that they can be making positive impact on the regular voters who stand back and watch this thing.
Oh, certainly. It shows immaturity, even if it is not the top-level staffers, that the people underneath have no more self-control than this, and these are the people that will be leading them later down the road. I just hope, and also it shows that they're not very focused. If you're Whitehead and Green and you're, you know, fighting against each other, you're obviously not paying attention to us and our top candidate, and that's good for us, but that will, you know, not pay them dividends in the long run.
That's correct, very correct, and it could show itself in that 10th district race, too.
Certainly. Well, another thing that kind of happened at the end of the week, did you see the pictures of the monster pig?
The monster pig?
The monster pig was shot over in Alabama.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You did see that.
Yeah.
And that kind of made its way to the blogosphere and in the papers. Actually,
yeah.
I was trying to find out a little information about this Chinese basketball prospect, so I clicked onto one of the English language Chinese newspaper to see what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Monster Pig was on the front page of the Chinese English language newspaper. Here's the question I have to you, Tim. Hoax or for real?
Oh, gee. I don't know. You know what I think about? I think about the bear a couple of years ago that Yahoo News picked up as a news story. Turned out to be a hoax.
Yeah.
The monster bear. So, you know what? I'm just going to have to lean toward hoax for now.
Yeah,
until
I think a whole lot of photoshopping was going on. The reason I kind of, you know, think these things are strange is, okay, I know if I, you know, took down Monster Pig, I would tell somebody that day. I wouldn't take a picture on May 2nd or May 3rd and then let everybody know on May 20th.
Right.
I just have to wonder why. And here's the thing. I mean, maybe I'm more of a scientist type, you know, love zoos and stuff. But I got to think, if you see Monster Pig, unless Monster Pig's coming at you, you don't shoot it. Then you get the, you know, the wildlife biology type folks trap this thing. To me, this thing would be quite a coup for any zoo, should it really exist.
And where's the Forestry Service in all this? I mean, if you caught a world record fish in Georgia, for instance, the first thing you would do would be to contact the Forestry Service.
Yes,
right?
And it's not been verified by anybody, but like the guy that runs Eddie's Taxidermy Service somewhere in
right.
South Alabama, and he says, hey, it's in his freezer. I mean, It just seems very, very hokey.
Well, think I'll go with hoax for now.
Yes, well, I know we're coming up on the time that Mr. Marlowe's going to call in soon, but in the meantime, we're going to discuss what I think is the most interesting topic of the political week. Did you see the poll done by Insider Advantage? And they decided to test the U.S. Senate race, and of course they tested Vernon Jones as the only announced candidate, which that's only what you should do. But they decided to pick maybe somebody with a little more clout and credibility. They put former Governor Roy Barnes in there, and the results were Saxby Chambliss, 42, Roy Barnes, 40. What do you think about that, Tim?
Well, I was a little surprised, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, Governor Barnes is not going to run. We know that. He is not going to run for political office. I think Bobby Kahn informed the AJC of that in, shall we say, some colorful metaphors. But you might notice one thing about both of those polls. In one poll, it was 42-40, Chambliss. In the other poll against Jones, 48-31. One good bit of good news there, Chambliss is below the magic 5-0.
He's way below the magic 5-0. Even when tested against Vernon Jones, he was below the magic 5-0.
Right.
Obviously, Vernon Jones was significantly lower than Governor Barnes, but his campaign was even promoting how much progress had been made, which I will say, I mean, it was a better number than the past polls that have come out, and that just shows that Chambliss has dropped. And I don't think that's all because he got booed at the Georgia GOP convention because of immigration. I think just Republican senator, just in the general, just in the general political community, is what's dropped him.
That's quite possible. And another thing we got to think about now: if you and I are paying attention to these polls, would-be Democratic candidates are as well, right?
Yes.
We could be looking at a heavyweight jumping into this race if these polls stay like this.
I think that certainly elicits interest. I saw somebody we've mentioned on the show before, Romtel Hayes' name mentioned as running, which not that he has certainly the resume of Governor Barnes, but it's obvious. I think he'd be a stronger candidate than Vernon Jones, provided that he has no, you know, set of skeletons in his closet that are, you know,
Let me throw a name at you. What about Kathy Cox?
Certainly, I think she's having a good time running that college. But, I mean, she brings a lot of credibility to the race. But, you know, both her and Lieutenant Governor Taylor, they had the chance to run in 2004 when Johnny Isaacson, you know, won that race and chose not to. So I don't know if that was just they were saving everything for the governor's race, or if it was just, I don't want to go to Washington, I want to serve at the Capitol in Atlanta.
Well, in the spring of 2003, David, Kathy Cox was our keynoter, as you know, up here in Chattooga County, and she told me point blank that night, I am running for governor.
Yes.
And she stuck to it, and it was obvious that Lieutenant Governor Taylor was running for governor as well. But with these polls like this, if they stay like this, both of them have got to at least be thinking about it, because both of these people enjoyed public service and would like to serve again, I would think.
Yes, and speaking of the poll we talked about earlier, Vernon Jones and Saxby Chambliss, that is a 48-31 race.
Right.
So it is, he is, once again, under the magic 50, which that's what's really, I think, going to pull up a lot. But I have to think that if Governor Barnes, while obviously they're, you know, don't want to get too excited over some, you know, media, you know, idea to stir something up for a political website, Insider Advantage, I have to think that, you know, they had to think, have a little bit of a conversation. I noticed that Chris Huttman, who, you know, works with Bobby Kahn, he got on the blogs and made a point, which I thought was a true point, that people, the heart grows fonder after seeing the opposite. which
right.
in this case, you had a man that maybe you could claim he did too much as governor, but now we have a man that's not done anything as governor, and the contrast certainly makes Governor Barnes look a lot better.
And it's got to provide a measure of satisfaction for Governor Barnes as well, David.
Oh, yes. I mean, that even just kind of in perception, even a comeback. But that's why I don't think the door's completely closed on that. But if nothing else, it may be a case where other folks look at it. Because I think, you know, just a few weeks ago, we were like, well, really scratching our heads. What are we going to do? Because in Simple's minds, Chambliss may have been very hard to defeat, but now they have to then rethink that with these numbers.
That's correct. More importantly, we got to realize for the first time, hey, we could beat this guy next year. Like I said, if you and I are thinking about it, who knows who else in this state is thinking about it. I believe someone, a real heavyweight, is going to jump into this race. I don't believe Vernon Jones is going to have this race to himself.
No. And I think the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee would have to intensify their recruiting based on this. The fundraising picture would have to change. I mean, that's one thing that I think would make Governor Barnes an attractive candidate. He is a man that can raise money.
Yes, he is. He can do that.
And I think that while, you know, it may have been all gone TV last time, there probably would be some, you know, things done differently, the money used in a bit of a different way and effective. Because I don't think anybody would claim Governor Barnes is not an astute politician. And one thing, sometimes you make mistakes, but if you're smart, you're going to learn from your mistakes. And I think he'd be a politician that would do that.
Absolutely. On the other hand, you picture Saxby Chambliss as an intractable sort of person, a guy that's not going to admit to mistakes, a guy that's not going to backtrack, a guy who's going to say, I know I'm right, and you people that are booing me, you're just wrong. That's the kind of guy Saxby Chambliss is, and therein lies his great weakness.
Oh, yes, and he's also a guy that, on the unfortunate side, is probably going to stoop to any means to win. And I'm surprised, even though former Senator Max Cleland has, you know, said, I'm not going to run, I'm surprised that Matt Tower, just for fun, didn't test that out since it would be the rematch number. And I'd just be interested to see what that was like.
Well, you mentioned Chambliss being the kind of guy that would stoop to any level. That was cute in 2002 when he was viewed as the insurgent, as the outsider knocking down the doors of the liberal bastion. But now he's the incumbent, and it's not going to be perceived in the same way by the voters. They'll be saying, wait a minute, why is an incumbent lashing out like this? I think it would be viewed as a sign of desperation this time around.
I think so, and I'm not so sure it was considered cute last time. And I'll tell you another thing, the perception of the war in Iraq, how Bush wants to handle that, and what the war on terror really is, have certainly sharpened and come into better focus, I believe.
Yeah, it really has. And it's at the forefront now, the issues that the voters think about all over this country. The polls consistently show it. And if a voter walks in the voting booth with Iraq first and foremost on his mind, David, he's not going to be interested in voting for Saxby Chambliss in 2008.
Oh, yes. Well, a federal race that's closer to us in time is the 10th congressional race.
Right.
And this week some more media went up. There was a commercial that sounded like it was selling, you know, Georgia football tickets, or possibly one of those commercials that you hear on the Georgia football broadcast, not a political commercial, because it didn't seem to have a lot of meat. You know the commercial I'm referring to?
No, sir, I have not seen it.
Okay. Earlier in the week, there was a commercial where Larry Munson endorsed Jim Whitehead, and it talked about how he had played football for Georgia, and I guess he, you know, this was back when he wanted to blow it up, or be okay with it being blown up. I'm not sure how you exactly interpret that. But he had this endorsement commercial, which it was a, you know, roughly a minute long, and it was Larry Munson's voice, and It didn't, but like I said, it just didn't have a lot of meat to it. It was all, you know, rah-rah, which I guess if you think, hey, the voters don't care about issues, you can, you know, sell a candidate the way you'd sell the local State Farm insurance agent or the, you know, the car dealer in town. Because, I mean, you've heard the Georgia football broadcast where Larry Munson does the local voiceovers for the different companies that endorse the local broadcast of the Bulldogs. It sounded very much like one of those commercials.
Yeah, and the thought, I'm sure, in the Whitehead campaign is that would play very well, you know, in Athens, Clark County, which is an integral part of the vote over there.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that was what they were thinking about.
Oh, I'm sure, and it just was very interesting the way that came up. And then there's been some more of the YouTube media that's come along. There was one put together by Bill Green's son where it had clips of Jim Whitehead being both in favor and against parts of the immigration bill. One point,
okay,
he would, you know, kind of ship them all back, and another point he was saying these people do good work. And it was just it was kind of a lot of double talk, and the Green campaign brought that to light.
Yeah, and at the same time, Green is accusing Whitehead, you know, of being in bed, essentially, with Saxby Chambliss on this immigration stuff. So immigration is really rearing its head in that race over there. It really is.
It is the red meat issue, and that's why, I've said it, you know, a few times already, I think is some of the Republicans, the true believers, the diehards, may leave Whitehead. They may see him as the middle-of-the-road choice, and you know, and being towards the middle in the Republican Party, especially in the South, gets you nowhere with a lot of the activists because they just want people that are, you know, red meat eating, you know, fire spitting, true conservatives. I mean, you've seen the campaigns, the true conservative, the real conservative. I'm more conservative than this, and it's just like a race to see who can run as far to the right as they can,
right
in the end.
And you alluded to this a little earlier. There's not going to be a lot of people vote, you know, in this one race. You would have to think that all the snapping that's going on, Green and Brown between them, could pull enough votes away to force Whitehead into a runoff.
Oh, I think they will. I think we all bought it last week, the chances there'd be a runoff.
I still
think it's going to be a runoff. And the efforts that the DPG are doing, and Martin's going to come and tell us more about that, are just sharpening. I mean, and I'm going to go ahead and tell this. I'm myself and Scott Aikman, that's been on the Kudzu Vine before, we're going to go over with Jane and go door-to-door. Don't think we'll be on the same team. Think we'll have, you know, maybe a different team depending on how many folks. But it's supposed to be a lot of events. And I think the way that the party is using that event to really galvanize support for the party, especially changing things at the federal level in our state, is going to be very effective. And we're going to see it's going to hurt Whitehead in two ways. He's going to have an energized, rejuvenated Democratic Party to his to one side, and then to the other, he's going to have people not believing he's a true believer in the Republican causes, like particularly Green is, and probably to an extent Braun. Although I just don't think Paul Braun outside of the district is making penetration. I don't know what he's doing inside the district. Hopefully we'll have some people that can, you know, that are in the district that can kind of tell us what he's doing inside the district. But I just don't get that sense. And with the internet, it seems like more and more, kind of the sense you get outside the district is kind of now what goes on inside the district. Whereas, let's say, three cycles ago, the internet was around, but it wasn't as good a barometer.
Right. You've got to think that the race obviously would be perceived differently inside and outside the district. Now, outside the district, from where we're sitting, around the country, this is going to be the first election since the Democrats won in a landslide last year. Obviously, people are going to be interested to see how this thing plays out in a district that normally is heavily Republican. If all of a sudden we have a runoff. That's got to send some shock waves around. Whereas inside the district, in a special election like this, possibly it would be more of a friend against friend, neighbor against neighbor type of thing, and essentially who gets their voters out.
Yes, and I definitely think even before the runoff, this is going to be an issue about concepts and ideas and, you know, some extent party affiliations. It's not going to be the geographic war that I think some people predicted, especially when you have Hudgens from one part of the district looking to run and Whitehead is another. And that's going to be, I think, better than if it was just a geographic turf war.
But if there is a runoff and a Democrat is in that runoff, then there is no way that the Republicans could spin that positively. I don't see how they could possibly do that.
Oh, yes. And you know, how will the Republican National Committee and the Congressional Committee for the Republicans, they can't get involved at this point, but then how much of their resources then do they save for the runoff and how heavily they get involved? I'm not sure how their federal fundraising is going now that they're in the minority. I know that I heard a report today on the Chris Matthews show saying that some of the Republicans nationwide, the congressmen have said they're not going to run again because if the lobbyists can't keep them in the lifestyle they're accustomed to for the last few years, that they may not be able to afford to stay in Washington, which is just sounds like a sad, sad state of affairs.
Well, what I'm hearing, David, is that for the first time in a very long time, the Democrats across the board are matching the Republicans dollar for dollar, and that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is actually raising more money than the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee. What I would like to know is if this thing is a runoff, then what will the DCCC do? Will they then come in with the necessary resources to make this thing a real horse race? I certainly hope they do.
Oh, I think we've said that for a while now. We hope they do because I think it's essential to stand and fight. I just listened to Terry McAuliffe's book, and the sense I get from him is a lot of times is you can always raise money after the election. You need to spend what you have. He was very critical of John Kerry for leaving money on the table. Well, you can probably go out and have special event fundraisers to raise for the special election, and that money could then, you wouldn't have gotten anyway, or you could replace it after the fact for what some people may say is a better target, but this is a chance to make a stand in the South, and particularly in our state of Georgia, and see what people feel.
Plus, it has always been my lifelong experience in politics that when you get to runoffs, all bets are off. The former rules do not apply. Not only would it be a place to make a stand, shoot, it might be a place to pull an upset and win that thing over there.
Yes, and particularly this situation where it's would be two parties in the runoff, because I don't see a scenario where it's two Republicans or two Democrats.
No, especially not two Democrats. No.
I think we've covered those candidates from what we can of their campaigns. There's not a lot out there for those ladies to cover. Well, there's one other subject that was on the blogosphere that I think we need to talk about. It was particularly early in the week. Ben Harbin, a former state patrol officer that I believe was former Governor Zell Miller's bodyguard, and he's a current member of the House of Representatives in the state, and usually pretty conservative on social issues, even, you know, made some statements in support of some type of flat earth society that alluded that the earth's not round. He was picked up on drunk driving charges.
Uh-huh.
Did you see
that?
Yeah,
I heard about this, yes.
So did you see the picture? His eyes were quite bloodshot. Somebody's speculating.
Yeah, he was quite drunk was what he was.
Yes, and it was just not a good scene. And I think the last time somebody got caught drunk driving recently, they were put out of the house pretty soon thereafter. And I know some other candidates have been caught, and that usually comes back to bite them. Now, the question would be, I think that district's pretty overwhelmingly Republican. Is it a good shot for us to win, or would the Republicans take him out in the primary? What does the party leadership do with him? What do you make of all that?
It's really hard to say. Harbin claims that he had this accident because he suddenly saw somebody walking across the road. He swerved, slammed on his brakes. But then the cops say, well, if you slammed on your brakes, where's the skid marks? And witnesses to this accident saw nobody walking across the road.
Yes, I saw that. A phantom people caused him to wreck in the telephone pole. Reminded me of this week's Lost.
Sound to me like a public official panicked and made up a story as he went along.
And that could come back to hurt him as well. Martin, Mahoney, I believe, just called in. Martin, how you doing?
Hey, Dave. Hey, Tim. How are you?
Good evening.
Doing well. We're just talking about Representative Harbin. Before we talk about anything else, if you want to just segue into that, if you have any thoughts.
Well, you know, I think it's an unfortunate situation. I'm glad that Mr. Harbin decided to issue a statement on it finally, but, you know, it does raise some serious concerns.
Yes, I won't, you know, make you go too far into that, but the biggest thing I think is a problem is this is a former State Patrol officer. I mean, my goodness, if there's any career that you would know better than drunk drive, it would be that one. But, Martin, we brought you in. Since we last talked a few weeks ago, the JJ dinner has happened, and we heard nothing but successful reports about it. We want you to talk about that.
Well, yeah, by anybody's measure, this was one of the most successful, if not the most successful, Jefferson-Jackson dinner that the party's ever had. We're pretty proud of what we did. We looked at about, I think the final crowd count ended up being around maybe a little over 1,700. Anybody who was there can tell you that room was packed. Senator Edwards was, of course, fantastic. His entrance and little mini rally at the beginning was a lot of fun. He had two drum lines from, oh gosh, I'm going to forget, I think, from a couple of high schools in Atlanta. And tons of supporters waving signs came in, and then he gave a great speech at the dinner too. And you know, one thing that hasn't gotten quite as much notice is we did something else new this year as well, and recognized some of our Democratic lifetime achievers, just folks who have been out there in the trenches promoting the Democratic message their whole life and doing some great work in advancing the party.
Yes, I saw some of the photos of that. I thought that was a great thing to do, and I don't know what form will keep that going in, but it's my understanding that that will be continued in some form every year as long as the current leadership with the current vision's in place.
Well, you know, Jane has always had a tremendous dedication to the grassroots and the people who make it happen, you know, at the doors, on the phones, and this is just kind of an example of that.
Yes. My understanding is the money was raised, and this is going to put the party in good financial shape to take care of the basics of the party functioning.
Absolutely. You know, I still haven't gotten a final number from our finance folks, but we're looking at about $600,000 raised, and that's it's a great number. Thank you to everybody who got involved and everybody who bought tickets and sponsorships to it. We're going to be in good shape. Another thing that we're doing new this year is the Jefferson-Jackson dinner is not going to be our only fundraising opportunity, and we're going to do some focusing on fundraising at the lower dollar levels as well. So we've got some good stuff planned that will be coming up in the next few months after we recover from JJ, and look forward to sharing that with you as well.
Certainly. Well, I guess going to the now we've raised the money, we've had our big event, now it's time to put some new plans in action, and we're going to see that this coming Saturday. I already announced myself and Scott Aikman off the Kudzu Vine are going to see it firsthand in the 10th District. Tell us what's going on there.
Okay, well, again, back to this grassroots, and I guess that's kind of the message of the year for us, grassroots. I think Mike Cantone was on a couple weeks ago, and I didn't get to hear everything he said, but one thing that he said was that we've been talking about around the office is that this 10th District race is kind of a it's kind of a lab for what we want to do in 2008 to prove that grassroots voter contact, canvassing, door knocking, phone banking, this is our lab to test what we can do in 2008 for all those state House races, all the state Senate races, congressional stuff, and of course the U.S. Senate race too. So what we're going to be doing is a mass canvass in the 10th district, kind of covering the 10th and also the 24th state Senate district, which is also open.
Yes.
And we're going to put just as many folks as we can on the streets spreading our message to good Democratic voters and good swing voters.
Yes, and now the canvas that will be happening, is a location been chosen yet, or is that still to be determined closer to Saturday?
Well, I know that we're on for sure in Athens, which is, of course, where I'm talking to you from today, and it's
yes.
A great Democratic stronghold in the 10th District. So we've got Athens for sure, probably the Augusta area, Columbia County area. And, you know, if we want to be district-wide, we need your help. We need everybody out there listening to you. Please get in touch with us at 404-870-8201 or email volunteer at democraticpartyofgeorgia.org. Let us know that you want to help. We'll send you out there. And we would love to have teams of canvassers in every part of this district on the 2nd.
Yes. So the plan will be as many people as will come, we'll split them up as needed.
Right. We'll be working out the logistics on that, you know, over the course of this week. So folks call, we'll kind of figure out where you want to be and then make sure that we can get you there.
Yes, because, I mean, I know for Scott and I mean, it's important that if there's a location we can be helpful a little closer to home, that would be preferable. But certainly I think, like most Democrats, if you said drive, you know, 50, 80 miles further because this is where you can be the most effective, that's certainly something we listen to, too, and heed.
Well, one thing that we've been really happy about is the number of Democrats, even outside the 10th District, who have said, yeah, you know, let's pitch in. We want to help. Tell us what we need to do. And, yeah, thanks to the folks in the 10th District and our volunteers all over the state, we've actually ID'd more than 5,000 voters just in the last couple weeks. We've made 5,000 phone calls to actual people who answered the phone and spread the message to them. So grassroots effort is going great.
Yes, and kind of explain to the people, because, I mean, I think, Tim, you and I all know that IDing doesn't mean, hey, they're a voter, you exist. It's a little more, it's a little deeper and more valuable than that.
Right. We're contacting these folks and making, you know, hundreds of phone calls a day. And when I say 5,000, I mean 5,000 people that we've actually talked to. The actual number of calls where you get somebody who's not at home or you talk to the machine, significantly higher, of course. But what we're doing is we're calling these folks and we're giving them a targeted message. For instance, you know, about health care for senior citizens. That's a good call to make during the day. Education. And basically telling these folks what Democrats stand for and encouraging them to vote for a Democrat on June 19th.
Yeah, so I take it you're not doing calls seeing who wants to bomb the University of Georgia. Take it making calls seeing who wants to drive around in trucks and round up everybody with skin a little darker and not making calls that, saying that Iraq's not important.
No, nor are we, and I want to clear this up because I think Senator Whitehead may still be a little confused. We are, in fact, not making calls to register known members of Al-Qaeda to vote either.
I wonder what that number would be. I think a person missing fingers could probably count that on one hand, how many Al-Qaeda members are in the 10th District.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, he wants to, he knows he doesn't have the issues. He just wants to play on the fear and the exploitation of that fear, and that's not what Democrats stand for. What we stand for is being tough on national security, protecting America, and, you know, protecting Americans as well.
Yes. Well, Martin, since you live in the 10th District, I know you drive into Atlanta, you know, most every day, but you're in the 10th District as well. What's something that the people that aren't in the 10th District won't see on the Internet, reading reports, listening to media? What's some things going on in the campaign that we wouldn't see?
Well, you know, actually, that's a tough question to answer because the folks out there on the Internet, our kind of progressive Democratic bloggers, are all over this race. They have really kind of stepped up and done more than their share. I think, you know, the progressive blogosphere has really done yeoman's work. What I'm seeing down here is Republicans who are fighting amongst themselves, doing some really immature things, and Democrats who, you know, really want to see us win, and then this kind of group in the middle that are saying, you know, we really are sick of Republicans. We're sick of the hijinks. We're sick of the leadership. We're sick of the poppycock. So, you know, what you're seeing is Republicans fighting over a pretty slender portion of base now, and Democrats are messaging to everybody.
Yes, yes. And
you know, let me just say also, that is really something that, you know, kind of taking more of a national view for a second, that's really something that the Republicans have forgotten about. That's something that this White House has forgotten about, is that when you're elected, you're the president of the entire nation. You're the congressman for that entire district, not just for the folks who agree with you.
Yes. And Tim and I were alluding to that as far as the campaigning goes, that the Internet is making it where you know more about what goes on in a district outside of it, but there's still some, you know, door-to-door street politics that you just don't see outside the district at times. And speaking of how rough and tumble some of the Republicans have gotten fighting with themselves, we want to make sure, is Chairwoman Kidd, has she gotten y'all in fight training, or is she getting y'all in maybe that that policeman diffusing angry people training, so when we go against the Republicans, there won't be as much violence, or at least we can handle ourselves the way they fight now?
Well, you know, I don't drive a pickup truck, so I think I'm pretty safe from the Green campaign, but I'm hoping I can talk myself out of anything with my boyish charm.
I just, Tim and I, that's one of the things we talked about early in the show, is how the Republicans are just showing a lot of maturity. You know, I think every cycle you see maybe a fight between two campaign staffers, but this is two fights within about 2 months between Republican operatives.
Just kind absolutely.
Of immaturity showing itself. And before we let you off the line, I want to ask you, Monster Pig, hoax or real?
I'm sorry?
The Monster Pig. Have you seen about the Monster Pig?
I have. I've seen a little bit about it. I'm not as studied up on it as I should be, so.
Is it a hoax or is it legit? What do you think?
Well, this was in Alabama, right?
This is in Alabama.
Well, if it was in Texas, I'd be a little more inclined to believe it because everything's bigger in Texas, but I sure don't know.
I don't want to venture a guess.
Yeah, I don't. I can't help but wonder if he's somehow related to President Carter's rabbit.
Well, Martin, of course, as always, enjoy having you on the show. Anytime you need to share any information
here
with us, don't be a stranger to the show. Calling in and let us know. But before we let you go, is there anything else besides the main two topics that needs to be covered?
Well, I do want to put in a pitch and a plug for Scott Nichols.
Yes.
You know, Scott is the chairman of the Columbia County Democratic Party, and he's also our candidate in the 24th State Senate District, and that's, of course, Jim Whitehead's old seat. So he's running. He's the only Democrat in the race, and he really needs your help. You know, special elections, low turnout. I think that the Republican base, like we talked about a little bit before, they're getting kind of turned off by what their candidates for Congress are doing. We got a chance to put a Democrat in the state Senate. We have a great chance to do it, and anything that anybody out there can do to help Scott Nichols out, he needs it, he appreciates it. You know, please get involved. That's part of our mass canvassing stuff is going to be working in that district. And I believe I hear it on good authority that Scott is going to have a fantastic website up and running in the next few days, and some other stuff going on. So pay some attention to him. And finally, last thing I need to say, please, DemocraticPartyOfGeorgia.org. Please go, and if you're not getting our newsletter, The New Day, please sign up for it. It's just full of fun information for you.
Yes. Okay. Well, Martin, thank you for coming on and sharing all that information with us.
Guys, thank you. I appreciate it, and please let me know when you want me back on.
Certainly.
All right. Take care now.
Yes. Well, Tim, just another informative report. Always good to have guests on the Kudzu Vine so we can learn a little more beyond our, you and I's expertise. Well, we're coming close to the end of the show. Of course, we want to have your outrage of the week. Do you want to go first with that, or you want me to give the media recommendation?
Let me go ahead and go with my outrage of the week. David, and I'll let you wind this thing up. You know, it's Memorial Day tomorrow, and since Memorial Day of 2006 until today, 980 of our soldiers have died in Iraq. The previous year, it was 807. Each year since the war began, that number has gotten progressively worse. To date, 3,451 American soldiers have died. To date, over 25,000 have been wounded. To date, over $500 billion has been spent in Iraq. And what did our president say about all of this this week when asked about the casualty outlook until September? Quote, "It could be bloody. It could be a very difficult August." Gee, aren't we glad he attended college? Unfortunately, the finest army in the world has to pay for this man's lack of leadership. I'm beyond outraged about this Republican foreign policy, Dave. I'm just sickened by it, and I'm sickened by the tragic words of this silly man. My outrage of the week.
Certainly, it's an outrage that's, you know, applicable every week. And one thing that never gets put in those figures, all the folks that go over there, maybe they are working for Halliburton, but the guy that just wants to make some money for his family that has a tough time in this domestic economy going over there and then gets either killed or injured driving a truck, those aren't counted in the soldier casualties, but those numbers have gotten rather high too.
Yes, they have.
And I think you've got to consider those in, because if we're not over there under false pretenses, things aren't being destroyed, needing to be rebuilt, and those lives aren't lost either. So,
and let's not forget all the civilians that have died over there in all of this either.
That's what I mean, the folks driving the trucks and not related. I mean, I tell you one thing that brought that home for me, I'm glad we got a little extra time, is I was watching the Christmas wrestling special, and I think it's good what the WWE does. They go over there every Christmas for the last few years. They have a show over there for the soldiers, and they've done it before in like Baghdad, I think, or not Baghdad, they did it earlier in Afghanistan, and before that, I think they even went to Germany because it was such a hot conflict, which it's not getting really any better because they were over there, they went ahead and went to Iraq, and just like half a mile from where they were setting up the rings into supposedly a safe area, a bomb went off, and they had, I mean, they like showed the camera, they had the lady that was the, you know, kind of the ring announcer girl, they just happened to be interviewing one of the soldiers. They had to dive under a truck. I mean, just really brought it home on how a place that's supposed to be where like the USO type activities are and are supposed to be safer, it's unstable. So I thought that was just something that's a few months old, kind of brought it home for me watching it, because you just don't see that raw footage at times on things that are, you know, non-news related. Well, my media pick of the week or recommendation is actually a dual recommendation. I've read two books back-to-back. One was What a Party by Terry McAuliffe. Has a very interesting section on party fundraising and how he kind of brought back the DNC, because even though his term didn't have big wins for us, he did do some structural things, which I thought were very good to read for looking where the Democratic Party of Georgia is, when it's kind of the same situation we were after 2000 as a national party. Things we can do to structurally set ourselves back up for when we do make a comeback. And then the other book I'm reading is The Republican National Committee's Chair, around the same time, Winning Right by Ed Gillespie. While the stories he tells I don't identify as much with, he actually writes more of a process book with some lessons like a good plan's better than a bad plan, but any plan's better than no plan. And I think we've all worked on campaigns where we could take that message to heart.
Absolutely.
Those no plan campaigns you work with, we certainly know that any plan is better. So sometimes it's good to read the other side to kind of see what they're doing, to see if you can call some tactics and process, certainly not their core beliefs.
That's correct.
Yes. Well, Tim, another good show. I think we covered a lot of content. We didn't have one of our fun game segments, but we are coming back next week with one of those. And also, be checking Tondi's Tavern. I didn't get a lot of chance to tell about this, but we're now the blog talk radio show of Tondi's Tavern, and Tondi's Tavern is the blog that we are affiliated with. So we're going to start posting what's going to be on the show on Tondi's Tavern, so start looking for that. I think during the week we'll have it for next week's show and then moving forward, so that way people can know what to look for. And once again, great show. Glad everybody could join us on the Kudzu Vine.
Good night.
Yes, bye-bye.